all my router friends are here tonight, except not really.
Where are they?
Some of my rowdy friends are here. Epic's here. Michael Schur joins us. Anna Kasparian is here. She's going to be leading the proceedings throughout. It is indeed quite a powerful panel. You know, you brought Epic Politics, Manda, back in good force earlier in the week on Old School, pulling out the representative for the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Amazing. I'm curious how you knew that. Do you study it?
Like, I am too, to be honest with you. Like, I have a retention for that stuff that I don't know.
Fascinating and very impressive.
It doesn't, well, I guess it has helped. I mean, here I'm sitting
here.
Well,
here there you are. Yeah. You're epic. Are you kidding me? Michael also works for I-24, by the way. You should check him out on I-24. All right, so we got, of course, plenty of news today about Trump and his instability and who's leaving his administration and what's his new nickname for Bannon. It used to be Bam Bam, as we explained yesterday on the show. Now he's got a new one, and it is as simplistic as we thought it might be.
There's some alliteration, which
a little bit.
There's actually alliteration. True.
Yeah, it could have been worse. It could have been worse.
Actually, it's hard for this man to make me chuckle, but when I saw that, I was like, because it was about Bannon, so who I also don't like.
That's right. Okay. And later in the program, Alex Jones goes on a rant. You know, we try not to cover him, but this one is particularly insane, but also dangerous. I'm going to explain why it's dangerous when we get to that story. Okay, all right, let's do it, Anna.
All right. Even though Steve Bannon seemed to backpedal and try to make amends with Donald Trump recently after giving some devastating quotes to Michael Wolff for his book, Donald Trump continues to punch back at Steve Bannon, and aggressively so. During a recent Twitter tirade, here's what Trump had to say about Bannon. The Mercer family recently dumped the leaker known as Sloppy Steve Bannon. Smart. Okay.
Usually he goes with sad, and now that Twitter's expanded, he usually fills it up.
Yeah.
But this one was just like a little quick, you know.
It was quick, and that Sloppy Steve nickname immediately began trending on Twitter. In fact, according to reports, within minutes of Trump's tweets, Sloppy Steve rose to the top of the list of trending terms in the US on Twitter.
Yeah, you know, as we were just mentioning at the start of the show, Sloppy Steve is not his worst nickname. You know, I thought it was going to be more simplistic, like Bad Bannon.
But that's even that. That there's alliteration there. There's a little bit of cleverness to the nickname, which is like Lying Hillary or whatever.
Crooked Hillary.
Or Crooked Hillary. There's no alliteration there. But
there's nothing clever.
But it was very simplistic, and of course
Lion
it worked
Ted.
With his base.
You're confusing Lion Ted with Crooked Hillary.
That's right. There's Lion Ted.
Ridiculous mistake.
There's alliteration. There's a little bit of cleverness.
Just a smidge, if you will.
By the way, Sloppy Steve comes just days after we learn that Trump throws his sheets on the floor and leaves his clothes on the floor and doesn't want the housekeepers to pick them up. And he's calling Bannon sloppy.
I don't know the story.
Yeah, well, you haven't read your excerpts of Fire and Fury. The president of the United States leaves his clothes on the floor and upbraided one of the housekeepers, according to Michael Wolff, for picking his things up. He also made sure that he is the one who pulls up his own sheets when it's time to change the sheets. He doesn't want anybody else touching his sheets.
No, you know what that is? That isn't about being sloppy. I hadn't heard that either. He's paranoid. Like, they're going to put something in his clothes. They're going to put something in his sheets. He is such a strange dude. The sloppy comes in when he's eating the burger in bed.
Yeah, right. Well, there's that too. Watching three TVs and having burgers.
Is that sloppy?
I wouldn't eat in bed, but okay.
I eat in bed all the
time. Anyway, these are all incredibly minor. Let's go back to the main event.
All right, so I want to really hone in on the main thesis of that tweet, which is Bannon losing funding. Now, we were all excited because it did seem as though Rebecca Mercer was about to pull her support from Breitbart, but that does not appear to be the case. She is pulling her support specifically from Steve Bannon, Breitbart might still get funded by the Mercers. So here is a statement from Rebecca Mercer in regard to Steve Bannon specifically. I support President Trump and the platform upon which he was elected. My family and I have not communicated with Steve Bannon in many months and have provided no financial support to his political agenda, nor do we support his recent actions and statements. And according to recent reporting, Mercer and her family have not withdrawn their financial support from Breitbart. Members of the board, though, including Mercer herself, have met recently to discuss whether or not to remove Bannon from Breitbart. So yeah, he would lose his job or his position at Breitbart.
So let's just go through that really quickly because it's really important. Because a conservative without a billionaire backer is basically homeless. Doesn't have anything. They never make any money, with the exception of Fox News. Credit where credit is due. So if he loses Breitbart, he's gone. Totally irrelevant. He's got nothing left. So now the Mercers, are they actually pulling away from Steve Bannon? Well, yes and no. So Robert Mercer is the guy who actually made the money. He works on Wall Street and bankrolls Breitbart. Now, when we found out, BuzzFeed did a great article about how Milo had gone and talked to neo-Nazis and white supremacists to write like the main thesis for what the alt-right is and what Breitbart stands for. And then Robert Mercer was like, whoa, that's toxic. I'm selling Breitbart to my daughter. So now that's why Rebecca Mercer owns Breitbart. So that was a preposterous distancing of himself. I mean, he distanced himself by about 1 inch from Breitbart. So now Rebecca Mercer is saying like, oh, Steve Bannon, we don't have anything to do with his political agenda, which means we didn't give money to Roy Moore in Alabama. That's all that means, right? And we're not pulling any money from Breitbart. But if they actually do kick him out of Breitbart, that at least is real. If they keep him at Breitbart, then the Mercers still completely and utterly finance Steve Bannon and therefore apparently agree with his agenda.
Yeah, and you should also point out that the Breitbart people like Steve Bannon. Mm-hmm. They like him more than they like the Mercers. And Steve Bannon, if the Mercers go away, can replace the Mercers. But he can't replace having Breitbart as his mouthpiece. I mean, Miles Kwok is a Chinese billionaire. He's a billionaire that is saying, I'm going to put money into Steve Bannon's Breitbart. The money will come. If he doesn't, as you pointed out, have Breitbart, then he doesn't have his mouthpiece.
So there's a possibility that nothing good comes out of any of this.
Right, there's a possibility that nothing good comes out of any of this. And the Mercers, it's not like the Mercers are going to pull their money out of Breitbart and then do wonderful things with
no,
it that make you smile, right? I mean, it's just punitive to Steve Bannon, which is, you know, in itself, you know, somewhat delightful. But by the same token, Steve Bannon will find a way, if he has Breitbart, to make sure Breitbart survives.
And look, side note here, it's really annoying that if you're in the middle or you're in the left, you have to earn your keep. You have to actually run a real business. You have to make a profit. You have to be sustainable. On the right wing, they just put up a little tin cup and they're like, okay, here, who would like propaganda? Who'd like propaganda? And somebody comes in and throws in money, whether it's a Chinese billionaire or a US billionaire. And they go, yeah, keep doing that right wing stuff about deregulating businesses and tax cuts for the rich. That's awesome.
Well, but also keep in mind that they don't merely exist because of the donors that want them to exist. Breitbart got a deal with satellite radio. They're on the Patriot Channel, you know. So there are platforms out there that give them a voice, give them the opportunity to spread that propaganda. Now, we're also on Sirius, and, you know, it is what it is. But the reality is, maybe they wouldn't be as profitable. They wouldn't really make enough money to keep their business sustainable or afloat, but there apparently is a market for this type of propaganda because they keep getting opportunities, which I would argue is even more questionable.
Yeah, no, look, last thing on that, I don't begrudge Sirius for giving them a show. I know a lot of people do, but that's the right wing in this country. They represent a certain percentage of people, and I think that's, you know, Sirius gets to put them on. I mean, even like to Michael's point, okay, so let's say you don't give Breitbart a show on Sirius Patriot. I have to be honest, I hate the name of that.
Every time I hear it, it
grates on my nerves.
That's the worst thing that Sirius did. Give them a lot of shows, but don't call one side Patriot, not the other side.
Yeah, it's really, that's actually super annoying. But But if you took Breitbart's show away, you'd put another right-wing show, and it'd be equally loathsome. But right. They get to be loathsome. It's a free country.
Breitbart would be syndicated elsewhere, right? They wouldn't be on Sirius. They'd be on, 7,000 channels on Clear Channel or something like that.
Yeah.
Which I don't even know.
All right. Well, moving on to some other news today. Donald Trump continues to argue against the validity of Michael Wolff's recent book, Fire and Fury, which was just released, early released actually. And in a recent tweet, he said that he authorized zero access to the White House, actually turned him down many times for author of phony book. I never spoke to him for book full of lies, misrepresentations, and sources that don't exist. Look at this guy's past and watch what happens to him and Sloppy Steve. All right, so Sloppy Steve was used again in this tweet. But it's unsurprising that he is calling into question the validity of Michael Wolff's book, even though Steve Bannon has not denied any of the statements that were leaked before the release of the book. And I do want to mention that there have been other members of the media that have criticized Michael Wolff's reporting in the past. Not that he reports false things, but that he might embellish things or use hyperbole to tell the stories, or maybe doesn't remember certain components of the stories exactly the way that they happened. But so far, based on what we know and what has been reported, no one has denied anything other than Donald Trump, which I think is a pretty telling sign.
When you go to the White House, when you're a reporter, you go to the White House and you're not what you don't have what's called a hard pass where you're there every day and you're part of the White House press corps every day, part of the pool, you get a temporary pass. So I will walk in, I'll show my passport, and they will give me my temporary pass that has already been, I've been pre-cleared, they've already gone through those motions. That temporary pass is gray. It gets me to the press room and not much more than that, to some of the offices within the press side. When you go and you get a blue pass, that means you have West Wing access. It's a West Wing pass. Zeke Miller of Time magazine and a few others have said that whenever they saw Michael Wolff at the White House, he had a blue pass. And you notice that when you're there every day because it's like, huh, that guy's got a blue pass. That's mm-hmm. pretty cool. He can go into the West Wing. There is no disputing that Michael Wolff was at the White House. And Trump says he didn't give him access. It's his White House that issued that blue pass. And
right.
the denying of what went on there is remarkable.
So I want to go to Michael Wolff himself because he had an interview with the Today Show. He gave them an exclusive interview and he responds to these accusations that he didn't even have access to the West Wing. Let's take a look.
Did you talk to the president? Did you interview him for this book?
I absolutely spoke to the president, whether he realized it was an interview or not. I don't know, but it certainly was not off the record.
I did, and you spoke to him at the White House after he was sworn in.
I spoke to him after the inauguration, yes. And I had spoken to, I've spent about 3 hours with the president over the course of the campaign in the White House. So my window into Donald Trump is pretty significant. But even more to the point, and this was really sort of the point of the book, I spoke to people who spoke to the president on a daily, sometimes minute-by-minute basis. So this book was really, in a sense, there was one question on my mind when I began this book. What is it like to work with Donald Trump? How can you work with Donald Trump? And what is the, how do you feel having worked with Donald Trump?
Yeah. So let's talk about what you mentioned there, Anna, in the beginning, which is some people saying sometimes Michael Wolff embellishes stuff. He says he's never had, of the millions of words that he's written in books and in articles, had one fact that was had to be corrected. And so I haven't checked every word he's ever written, but okay, that's a bold statement and likely proven false if it was false. So, and no one has said that it's false. So, okay, likely to be true. And we say, we report that in an effort to be fair,
right?
But it's not, I don't want anybody walking away thinking 50-50. It ain't 50-50. Michael Wolff's a real reporter that's been around for decades, and Donald Trump is a notorious pathological liar who has every interest in the world to lie about this situation. Now, having said that, the Trump team says they once talked on the phone for 7 minutes. And Michael Wolff says in total in the campaign and in the White House, I've talked to him for about 3 hours. My guess is that particular thing, the quotes he can't make up. He'll be in massive trouble if he made up the quotes, and he's got audio tape of most of it or contemporaneous notes, etc. But my guess is on the number of times he actually spoke to Trump, it's probably somewhere in the middle. And I'm not doing both sides do it or trying to call it even. It's just that 3 hours on the campaign in the White House, kind of. What does 3 hours mean, right?
Cumulative is what he's saying. Yeah. He's saying cumulatively. The White House can say he only spoke to him for 7 minutes because they keep a log of every minute of phone call he has. So it may not have been on the phone that they spoke every time, but there's a White House log that says 6 minutes and 48 seconds Michael Wolff spoke with the president, right?
Right.
Michael Wolff could say, well, I saw him at Mar-a-Lago. I saw him on the campaign trail. I was in the White House. We passed by. I talked to him. You know, whatever.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. But I just want to explain. It's the least relevant part.
The question is,
are the quotes right?
Right.
Yeah. Are the facts right?
And I want to jump in on that point because I think that is the most relevant part of this. I don't care how long they spoke. I want to know whether or not these quotes are valid. And I believe they are valid because remember, Trump and his lawyers sent Michael Wolff and the publisher of his book the cease and desist letter threatening a lawsuit. And guess what they did? They released the book early. Okay, and I think the reason why they did that is because they're confident in the validity of the contents of that book. He would face significant, legal action if there was real defamation in there, if things were fabricated and made up. And in this next video, he talks about the evidence that he has, which I think is also valuable. Take a look.
Do you have recordings of some of these interviews and some of these conversations?
Well, I work like every journalist works, so I have recordings, I have notes. I am certainly and absolutely in every way comfortable with everything I've reported in this book.
Would you release any of those recordings since your credibility is being questioned?
My credibility is being questioned by a man who has less credibility than perhaps anyone who has ever walked on earth at this point.
So I want to make, that was funny at the end, but I want to make I just forgot my point. Go ahead.
Okay, so look, in regards to that quote, it's funny, but he's absolutely right. In the sense that, I don't know that he's absolutely right about Trump being the very last person on earth you should trust, but he's in the ballpark. No, in terms of whose interest are we looking at here? Donald Trump has all the interest in the world to say that he doesn't have credibility. I mean, you should discount that completely. You should go. And by the way, when Michael Wolff says, I have all the credibility in the world, you should also discount that. You should go to neutral sources. Hey, what is the totality of Michael Wolff's career? What do other journalists say about him? Have people denied what he said in the book? Those are the things that you look at. Just saying, hey, he's questioned your credibility. Yeah, of course he questioned it. The guy buried him in the book, right? Yeah. He looks terrible. So, and when you look at those neutral sources and outside sources, first of all, it's amazing that no one has denied a single quote in the book outside of Trump.
Right.
That's amazing. And they work for Trump or worked for Trump. So that, oh my, that is overwhelming evidence. Point number two is, so they questioned this, one of the scenes they and they most questioned that the Trump team did because it involved Russia. It was at a dinner at Michael Wolff's house, and the late Roger Ailes, who used to run Fox News, and Steve Bannon were there. And Ailes says to Bannon, I don't know why he listens to Putin so much. I don't know who's jerk and who's chain here. So that's really interesting for those guys to think that. Even before Trump took office, that was on January 3rd. And they're like, oh, that's not true. There's no way that's true because it's about Russia. Janice Min, who helps to run Hollywood Reporters, like, I was at the dinner. It was word for word. That's absolutely accurate.
So I wanted to jump in on another criticism that Wolff has faced. And I think that it's a valid criticism based on, what you think about journalistic ethics. Because Michael Wolff got the access that he got by being very kind and sucking up to Trump and members of his administration. And he would make these public displays of supporting Trump. So I'll give you one example. He was on Brian Stelter's show on CNN, Reliable Sources, and during a live interview that he had on that show, he kind of scolded Brian Stelter for being too critical of Trump. So he knows that Trump watches cable TV. He knows that Trump was gonna view that and see that Michael Wolff is kind of defending him there. He played a certain role in order to get the access that he wanted. Now, if that's unethical or not, I mean, it's really up to you. But it gave him what he needed in order to get some of this content for his book.
Yeah, I think you're being too critical to Michael Wolff.
but in all seriousness, though, one second on that. Mm-hmm. And you know that Michael Wolff didn't mean those compliments because he now says Donald Trump is the least credible person on earth.
Yeah.
So when he was defending him earlier, that was obviously BS. Just keeping it real.
But also one thing to know about Michael Wolff is that his career, a lot of his writing, it has been about social, wealthy New York. And Donald Trump, before he was your president, was part of social, wealthy New York to some degree. He was ostracized by a lot of people there. But he was the kind of shining, you know, shiny ball that would be followed by Michael Wolff in his reporting as a reporter. So it goes to reason, it stands to reason, that he's the kind of person who would know how to break into the mindset and of Donald Trump. And that's just really good journalism. The people who are criticizing it, I'm guessing, are jealous of it. One of the other things you should do is you should look back to criticism that Bob Woodward got when he wrote a book about the White House called, I think it was called Shadow or Shadows. And he quoted and he presumed and he talked about, well, then George H.W. Bush walked out onto the Truman balcony and thought so-and-so. Well, he never talked to Bush about that. But enough people in Bush's sphere said, this is what the president did. He went outside. He thought, I need to go down to, Khrushchev and say this, or, you know, Gorbachev and say this, or whatever. Not Khrushchev, but Gorbachev.
I'm making
this up because that's just a, you know, one of the possibilities of what was said. But that's how reporting is done, too. You speak to the people around him, and to Cenk and Anna's point, nobody has refuted it, right?
Yeah.
Except the president. When you, any kind of book like this, these books that, there's always one person who finds it scurrilous, the person about whom it is written. And, whether it's a movie star, a rock star, or the Mr. Trump.
And one more thing about that. There's no way that the Trump team right now isn't calling every single person in the book going, go out on TV and refute it. Go out on TV and refute it. And everybody's like, nope.
Yeah.
So that's, and Bannon has now become cucked, right? And so he went out there because he's on the precipice of losing his entire career and his funding and all of that. And he went on his serious show and said, oh, Trump is a great man. I talk about the Trump miracle all the time. But he didn't refute any of the quotes.
That's right. Yeah.
And in fact, there's one guy now, Sam Nunberg, who we're going to talk about later in the show, who's going around saying, I probably called him an idiot. In other words, yes, you did.
Yeah. And even Tillerson, before the book, when he was accused of calling him a moron, never denied that he called him a moron, said, I'm not going to address that, you know,
yes.
Which means I called him a moron.
Exactly. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, more relevant portions of Michael Wolff's interview with the Today Show.
All right, back on the Young Turks, a couple of tweets for you guys. Chasman writes, good to see Michael Schur, a knowledgeable guy, always with great viewpoints.
Look at that.
Okay, God bless. Eldo Wende Chingon writes in, to be fair, I've heard more clever and creative insults hurled in the schoolyard. Well,
that was about Sloppy Steve.
Yes, yeah. Of course.
No, but we're talking about Trump's tweet or nickname being clever relative to Trump's other nicknames, not relative to other nicknames in general.
Right.
Which leads to the Mathemagician's tweet. He says, by the way, the Mathemagician, now see, that's a clever title or handle.
When the president gave him that title, I was really impressed.
Inconceivable. He writes, Crooked Hillary, Sloppy Steve, Lion Ted. Trump shows once again he's the master of Twitter handles for moronic followers. Which is perfect, because right after Donald Trump tweeted about Sloppy Steve, his son, Junior, tweeted like, they did it again. That is genius branding, gold. Like, only someone with Donald Trump's genes would think like, Sloppy Steve, got him.
This is the genius who came up with Donald for his son's name.
All right, I arguably went too far in the opposite direction with Prometheus. Okay, Connor Bardeen writes in on YouTube Super Chat, and this is a really interesting point. Trump eats his burgers because he's afraid of being poisoned, probably because he knows how fond the Russians are of poisoning their associates. But by the way, I had never thought of that. That has some percentage chance of being true. I don't know if that's 12% chance, 1.2%, or 38%,
but that is some contributing factor.
It could be a contributing factor, right?
It's interesting that he loves McDonald's and thinks that it's safer to eat that as opposed to food prepared by other people, because I just, like, not a knock on McDonald's, like, I ate McDonald's, but I wonder if he knows what it's like behind the scenes as the food is being made and processed and all that. So anyway.
But no, but it's not about that. It really, it's about, like, both don't touch my clothes, don't touch my sheets, don't touch my food is I'm paranoid.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's paranoid about, but he's definitely paranoid about that somebody's gonna do something to him.
Right.
And if you're in business with Russian oligarchs and you owe them a lot of money, there might be some reason for paranoia. Anyway, one more thing. I keep mentioning Aspiration to you guys, because so they're our sponsor, and so I got a sheet that reminded me of all their attributes. They're crazy, dog. Okay, so I'm going to Vegas tonight, and CES is coming up.
Well, that's why you're going to Vegas?
Oh yeah, I mean that's
okay. Because I'm going tomorrow, and I'm not seeing anything to do with CES.
So as I was looking through it, first of all, again, I was thinking, free ATM anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, that's awesome. They're too lib. They give away 10% of all their proceeds
to charity,
and then I saw this. They have a 1%. Yield if you have more than $2,500. Even if you don't, it's 0.25%. You
might
think.
On a checking account.
Yeah. Because, like, you might think, like, 1%, what's a big deal? Unless you've actually banked anywhere else. And now, there's no way you can get 1% anywhere, right?
It also proves to you, because they can do this without batting an eye, how much money the banks are making, right?
Yeah.
That's right. And this is actually competition for the first time, because they're an online bank. They don't need all the expense of having all those retail shops, et cetera. They're not, I don't know, I guess you're not supposed to call them a bank, but they're where you put your money and then you get your money out. Anyway, aspiration.com. And they have no monthly minimums either. So
it's a financial institution.
It's a financial institution. Mm-hmm. Anyway, bless their liberal hearts.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you want to do banking or something akin to that, aspiration.com.
Okay.
All right.
Michael Wolff has granted an exclusive interview to the Today Show, and in that interview, he clarifies sections of his book that I think is pretty relevant to some of the discussions happening throughout the country. Now, in this next video, he talks about and elaborates this notion that people around Trump in the White House do not think he is competent for the job. Take a look.
According to your reporting, everyone around the president, senior advisors, family members, every single one of them questions his intelligence and fitness for office.
Let me put a marker in the sand here. 100% of the people around him.
Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, Ivanka Trump, question his fitness for office?
Every time I want to be careful about who I spoke to, because the nature of this kind of book is you kind of grant everyone a veil. But Having said that, certainly Jared and Ivanka, in their current situation, which is in a deep legal quagmire, are putting everything on the president. Not us, it's him.
Oh, see, that's to me more important than who thinks he's an idiot. I believe that if it's not 100%, it's 95%.
Yeah, I can't imagine Hope Hicks being asked that question, saying she thinks the president's an idiot, because she has been stalwart in her, you know.
That's right. I'd be surprised by that too. Eric and Donald Trump Jr. are not in the White House, but I'm sure that they would defend their dad. And on the other hand, they're not the paragons of intelligence. So
I'd be curious to hear what Sarah Huckabee Sanders said when asked, if asked.
But look, it doesn't matter if it's 100%, 95%, or 85%. There's overwhelming quotes, none of which are refuted, that they all think that he's an idiot. Okay, that's easy. To me, the more relevant part of that clip was Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump apparently believe they're in deep legal trouble and are saying, it's not us, man, it's him, it's not us. Now, if his own beloved daughter and son-in-law are saying that, that means he's in a world of trouble. We don't realize the depths of his legal trouble.
Well, we don't realize how not beloved they are, because some of the remarks that he made about about Jared and even his own daughter were not fully flattering and fully on board in the excerpts that I read.
And in the book, when the first stories about the book came out, based on some of the reporting in the book, I said, it would not be totally stunning at this point if Kushner flips on him. And he goes, well, I'm going to get the hell out of Dodge, man. This is, I don't want to go to prison. Remember, Jared Kushner's dad did go to prison. Mm-hmm. And so probably not fond of the idea. So could he? And remember, Donald Trump's a maniac. So it makes it a little easier, even if you're a son-in-law, to go, look, I can't help the guy. The guy's crazy. Yeah. So yeah, it's him. I didn't do the deal with Russia. He did it. So we'll find out. But that's very interesting and one to put a marker on, as Wolf would say.
So let's hear a little more from Wolf.
I will tell you the one description that everyone gave, everyone has in common. They all say he is like a child. And what they mean by that is he has a need for immediate gratification. It's all about him.
So I feel like, look, that's not surprising to me.
We didn't learn that from Michael Wolff.
We didn't learn that from Michael Wolff. Obviously publicly, with their names revealed, they're not going to come out and say these things about Trump. But the people that are working in his administration right now are still people. They're not blinded by their political ideology. They're very well aware of who Trump is because he acts the way he acts very publicly, where we all see it.
That goes to what this book does. Everybody says, you can pick it apart, but basically, it's the sort of the affirmation of mm-hmm. so many things that we have believed about Trump, as witnessed and as sort of confirmed to this writer. It's helpful because of that, because it's not just me who thinks this guy is this.
Yes.
It's everyone in his sphere every day.
Because look, honestly, before this, I'm hyper aware of my own bubble or my own biases, and I don't ever want that to get in the way of doing fair coverage, fair commentary of any given topic. So sometimes, when I would be critical of Trump, I would think about it, I'm like, am I criticizing him because I disagree on policy or political ideology, or am I fairly criticizing him because he's acting like a crazy person? And this feedback that we're now getting from members of the White House makes me feel, allows me to rest assured that it's not about political ideology. Look, I disagree with Republicans and conservatives on a wide range of topics, but I at least can have a civil conversation with them or a civil debate with them and debate the ideas. With Trump, it's a completely different animal. It's how disrespectful he is, how childlike he is, the need for instant gratification, the need for attention, the need to be the need to constantly have his ego stroked, like all those issues are what stand out to me with Trump.
And temper tantrums.
Yes.
And so look, I give you a good counter example. Mitch McConnell, can't stand him, totally corrupt, works for his donors. I've got nothing but bad things to say about Mitch McConnell, but nobody thinks he's a child. He's a grown up, he's an adult. Nobody thinks he's stupid. No, he's a perfectly bright guy. In my opinion, he's a bad guy. And I don't agree with any of his policies. But nobody calls him a child or stupid. That's just not the case. So it's just that is what Trump is. And look, now I'm going to get a tiny bit absurd here. I'd like a little bit of credit for being among the first to point out all these things. In the book, they talk about money laundering. I mean, how long have I been saying that the real problem with Trump is not the collusion during the elections, it's the money laundering with the Russians? How long have I been saying the number one word I use was child, man child. And it turns out, putting aside the absurdity of giving me credit, I don't know who's
giving
me credit.
It is a little absurd.
Right? But the important part is what Michael said, which is that, so it's not our perspective that led us to conclude that he's a child. It's everyone around him also, it's not like they watch the Young Turks and they're like, I think Cenk's got to figure it out. They're like, no, it's super obvious, the guy's a man child. And I guess the reason that I point out the thing that I've been saying all along is because it drives me crazy when, and I get why they do it, but when mainstream media tells us sometimes the emperor has clothes on, I'm like, no, we don't have to pretend that he's not childlike. Of course he's childlike. Of course he is. You can see it with your own eyes. And they did it with Bush. Bush versus Gore in that election back when I was a Republican. I'm like, one guy is clearly dumber than the other. Why won't they say it? And in the case of Trump, he's broken all of Bush's records.
He has, and that's terrifying. So there are more portions of this interview that I definitely want to get to, so let's do it. Now, during Michael Wolff's interview with the Today Show, he talked about very specific concerns and criticisms that White House staff have, including how incredibly, how much he lacks intellectual curiosity. Okay, so let's hear from Michael Wolff himself on this issue.
You said that these senior people insult his intelligence. What are the kinds of things people would say?
They say he's a moron, an idiot. Actually, there's a competition to sort of get to the bottom line here of who this man is. Let's remember, this man does not read, does not listen. So he's like a it's like a pinball, just shooting off the side.
So again, that is another portion of his book that I think has been reinforced. Like, it reinforces stuff that we already knew, because we knew that Trump didn't like the intelligence briefings. We knew that people had to give him briefings in tiny little spurts because they couldn't, you know, get his attention for long periods of time on important issues. So this book, in my opinion, just kind of reinforces those elements of Trump that we already had learned about.
Right, and you know, I don't know if you have. I have not read the book yet. But everything I've heard about it is exactly what I expect more of when I do read it. And you know, you'll remember he gave a press conference when on repeal and replace, when he said we're going to get this done, and somebody asked him what he wants to change, and he had no clue. He hadn't read the health care bill. He didn't know what the Affordable Care Act was, other than he didn't call it that. He called it Obamacare, and that was enough for him. So that in and of itself is childlike. If you look at his entire administration, I've said it here before and I believe it, as motivated by a schoolyard spat that he had with President Barack Obama at the White House Correspondents' Dinner when he made fun of him, and he's just spending 4 years getting back at him, it's reinforced in these pages too.
Well, let me disagree with at least a part of what you just said. There's no way it's going to be 4 years.
Well, you know what I'm saying?
No, I'm kidding. So, but
I think you're right too.
This is speeding up. His demise is speeding up. This, like, now it's become kind of irrefutable. And so I want to talk about that. When we talk about what the book says, I don't want you guys to get the wrong impression. This is not a book about Michael Wolff's opinions, right? This is a book quoting almost, I mean, you don't have to say all, but a tremendous number of people who work at the White House. He interviewed 200 people. He had access to the White House. It's not his opinion. It's what his sources, people who are closest to Trump, who work with Trump every day, say about him. Mm-hmm. Okay, and to me, the most important part, I mean, sure, he's not bright. We know that. That's obvious, right? From all that you've seen. And that apparently does not bother his voters, which is telling. But he said he does not read and he does not listen. Mm-hmm. And look, we've talked about how they had to keep boiling things down from 4 pages to 1 pages to tweet size and put his name in and put pictures in and all that stuff. So we kind of know, but just focus on it for a second. If you have a guy who's the most powerful man on earth, in charge of the country, president of the United States, commander in chief, and he refuses to learn anything.
Yeah.
I mean, he never worked in politics, so he doesn't know what the nuclear triad is and doesn't want to know. Anybody think he knows the difference between a Sunni Muslim and a Shia Muslim?
There's no chance.
Right? And that makes all the difference in the Saudi-Iran conflict, which is monumentally important. But he doesn't know it and doesn't want to know it and will never learn it. And he doesn't even listen, because if you're not saying the word Trump, he doesn't care. To have a person that indifferent to the fate of our country and the policies that we have is incredibly dangerous.
You want the leader of the country to make informed policy decisions. And if he's unwilling to listen to any information, then he's not going to make informed decisions. But look, all of this stuff just keeps reminding me of stories that we've done recently. So remember, the big story, I believe it was last week, was the fact that a New York Times reporter managed to get an impromptu interview with Trump. And during that interview, Trump felt the need to say that he understands all the big bills. He knows the big bills better than any former president in US history. And the fact that he felt the need to say that and you know, mention that in the interview, I think is also telling. Like, he's obviously insecure about how much he knows about the legislation that he's touting endlessly.
It's like the kid in high school who screams out, "I'm not gay." You're like, "What? Nobody asked you. Why did you say that?" Or like the kid in the Oval Office who says, "I have a big button. It's bigger than yours, and it definitely works." Right?
Yeah.
There's something that you're obviously insecure about. Could you imagine if Obama or Clinton had said, or Reagan, right, had said, "I know all the bills. I know the big bills. I know the big bills better than anyone."
Of course not, but they wanted to be president. If you believe the narration of this book, this is the part he didn't expect to have to do, right? He could get on with all this bullshit that we hear him talk about now when he was a candidate, because they were falling for it. My God, I'm just going to go out there and say, "I know these bills better than everybody." Then they voted for him, then he became president. Now, he can, but it's not going to work.
So there's one final portion of the interview that I want to show you guys, and this has to do with Donald Trump's mental health. Of course, there have been, there has been some speculation about whether or not he's dealing with any mental health issues. I feel uncomfortable speculating about that. Not a mental health expert, but they touch on that topic in this interview. So let's take a look.
The president's close advisors, people around him, have noticed him repeating stories, expression for expression, you say, within a short period of time.
In a shortening period. So they've all tracked this, that it used to be, I know people would point out that in the beginning, it was like every 25 or 30 minutes, you would get the same three stories repeated. Now it's the same three stories in every 10 minutes.
Oh, and what's the suggestion there? Because that goes beyond saying, okay, the president's not an intellectual. I mean, what are you arguing there? You say, for example, that he was at Mar-a-Lago and didn't recognize lifelong friends.
I will quote Steve Bannon. He's lost it.
That's interesting. I mean, there, you know, Congress was briefed by a Yale. Did you cover this already?
No.
Yale psychiatrist.
A Yale psychiatrist. Some members of Congress were all Democrats on the president's mental acuity, you know, right now. It's hard to do that from afar. It's almost, illegal. It is illegal for someone to actually make a diagnosis from afar. But they're briefing because they're trying to add a codicil to the 25th Amendment that says that there has to be a way of judging the mental capacity of the president.
Yeah, so I'm torn on this one because, not recognizing old friends, that raises an eyebrow. But that's one anecdote as opposed to the rest of the book that is like on his lack of intellect and lack of interest in learning anything. There's 1,000 anecdotes.
Yeah.
And so, And part of the reason I'm torn is not because I've got any interest in defending Donald Trump. Quite the opposite. He's always been really, really stupid. So like this new twist, I'm serious. This new twist where people are like, I don't know if he understands things anymore. What do you mean anymore? I've never known Donald Trump in public to understand anything. He's always had wild, insane conspiracy theories. He's never known a thing about policy, never cared to know anything about it. He's never had any intellect. I mean, this goes all the way back to, it's one of my favorite anecdotes, his accountant, when they asked him about Donald Trump, he said, he never asked any questions. He just said, "Make my taxes lower." I don't know. And his wife, Ivana, would ask a bunch of really intelligent questions. The accountant was trying to defend him. And then they asked about his dad. And his dad, and he was like, "No, his dad was really smart." Like, no, Trump's always been an intellectual little person. Okay. So on the whole, he's losing it. But hey, look, if people hang on to that to use the 25th Amendment,
Yeah, well, let me just say, separate from Trump, completely separate from Trump, I think that should be a part of our Constitution. I think making sure that the mental health of the president is incredibly important. And remember, most of the time, people running for president are older. And it's a natural part of life. As you get older, you know, you do lose memory and certain things do happen, okay? But one other thing that I wanted to quickly mention, She specifically touched on the fact that he keeps repeating the same stories within the same brief period of time. And I don't know if he's always done that, but if that is a serious thing that's happening, then I don't know how you move forward.
Right? Well, I mean, it's habitual too. I mean, he was on the campaign trail and you'd follow him on the trail. You go from event to event to event to event. He'd say the exact same things, make the same jokes, and that's what they do.
Right.
Because there's only so much material they can come up with. And it may have programmed this guy.
Yeah, he's always repeated things. I'm not worried about that either. But look, and I'm a little worried about using the 25th Amendment because I'm worried about the precedent. Then all the parties are always going to question the intellectual capability of an older president.
You worry about the precedent more than you worry about the president.
In that case. But on the other hand, Jamie Raskin is leading this movement in Congress, and it's at least something we should begin to study.
Yeah.
Because it does happen, and so we don't know that it's happened here. They should look into it. I don't know how you would assess it. But if it did happen, which is certainly within the range of possible, well, that's a real serious issue, no matter Democrat or Republican, for the country if the president no longer has his mental faculties such as they were in his case.
Another member of Congress told me about Jamie Raskin that he's the smartest person in Congress.
Yeah, Jamie Raskin. It's wonderful.
An impressive thing to say.
Yeah, he's incredibly smart and incredibly progressive. You should check out his work in Congress.
All right, we got to take another break. When we come back, a former Trump advisor, a longtime Trump advisor, admits that he probably called Trump an idiot.
I love this quote. You're going to love it too. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, Michael Schur, Anna Kasparian with you guys. Tolu Tanialu writes in on YouTube Super Chat. I just wanted to say his name.
Super Chat?
Wolf trumps the orange orangutan. Okay, God bless. Santos Huante writes in, Mitch McConnell's a snapping turtle. Okay, God bless. Cindy Wyant writes in, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if Trump's kids flipped on him, because I'm 98% sure he'd try to blame them too. And Dr. Chaos MD says, if Trump thinks his son-in-law and his daughter, another Trump herself, wouldn't throw him under the bus to save their own asses, he's even dumber than I imagined. Which is a fair point.
Did you want to say something?
So just one more thing. I wanted to thank the members. Calvin Doherty and Alyssa Romero. They're the members of the day. We got a great post game coming up for you guys today too. And obviously you could check out all the week's Rebel Headquarters, Aggressive Progressive, Old School, all that without any commercials. So join us at tytnetwork.com/join. Okay, what's up, Anna?
So I also wanted to address another tweet that we got. It was from Alman Barrister, and he said that many people have denied parts of Wolf's book, most prominently the former PM of the UK, Tony Blair. To say nobody has denied anything and use that as your argument to prove the validity of the book is disingenuous and frankly beneath you guys. So I hear you. We haven't read the full book yet. I just got it.
What I was going off of was people who, if Blair had said something is quoted in the book, I haven't read that quote.
Exactly. We haven't covered that.
But there are people who have, they're not people within the White House who have said, that's not true, because there are people in the White House who said that. They're not people that I've read so far who have been quoted or referred to who have denied it.
Yeah, so
a little different, but that's a fair point, definitely, if
so
that's the case.
So for the people who have denied the book, if you guys come across anything, please feel free to tweet that to me. But in regard to the coverage that we've done so far, most of it has been about Bannon and Trump's kids and White House staffers. I haven't seen anything of anyone denying anything. Like Bannon hasn't denied anything. Yeah. I haven't seen Ivanka or Kushner deny anything. So
that guy sounds like a good guy trying to help us in figuring out exactly what's happening lately. I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea though. Like sometimes the right wing, which I don't get the sense he is at all, will do stuff like, oh yeah, you can't even talk about the book. Have you read the book? It came out this morning. How would we have read? And that doesn't mean you didn't read parts of the book. A lot of the book has been published in articles,
right.
And those are the parts that we've read. And so,
here's a question: do you think the president's read the book?
Well, no,
he doesn't read.
No, no. So it is about him. Okay, and he does read articles about himself. Okay,
I think he skims them. But
so, just real quick on that, the White House, in their usual incompetence, couldn't get a copy of the book. They partly sued to get a copy of the book. In their lawsuit, they're like, by the way, You really have to give us a copy of the book. Okay, so now it's there's no way you could have read it because they didn't even have a copy as recently as yesterday.
Because they didn't call their independent bookseller anywhere in America and order a book. You don't have to go through a big book buyer to a bookseller to buy a book. You can go to an independent, which is always nicer.
I like that progressive messaging that Michael throws in
there. I've always said it. Whenever we have guests on, I always say that you can buy their books at independent bookstores.
Or an independent. Or you could use independent financial institutions like Aspiration.com.
Right. Or independent councils.
That's right, like RobertMueller.com. Anyway, so bottom line is the book came out this morning. Has Trump read it yet? Of course not. Will he read huge parts of it? Yes, because it's about him. Will he read the whole thing? I'd be really shocked.
Right. Yeah. Definitely, if there's an index, he's all over it.
Cliff notes. For
index is like, okay, so Sam Nunberg.
But anyway, I'm not interested in proving the validity of the book. If there are things that are invalid and there's evidence to prove that it's invalid, then let me know because I don't want to give you guys false information.
Of course. All right,
moving forward. Now, we have someone who has not denied what has been written about his comments on Trump, and that's Sam Nunberg. Sam Nunberg, a former longtime advisor to Donald Trump, was asked about whether or not he called Trump an idiot, which was reported in Michael Wolff's new book, Fire and Fury. And what he told ABC's The Briefing Room was interesting to say the least. Let's take a look at the first video.
I haven't seen, by the way, today. Where was it written that I called him an idiot?
That's in the book. The ABC News has obtained a copy, and that was a quote that's actually from the book. One of the quotes is, this is what you're quoted as saying, is Trump a good person, an intelligent person, a capable person? I don't even know, but I know he's a star. And another quote was referring to Steve Bannon. I believe it was, if you could get this idiot elected twice, you'd go down in history.
Oh, sure. So I may have said that as a joke. I don't believe the president. Look, I think Karen knows me very well. Rick, I haven't spent that much time with you. But I'm from New York, and I'm very sarcastic. I would tell you he's not. I certainly probably said that, but he's by no means an idiot.
Okay, so he's saying that he was joking, was being sarcastic.
Okay, I love the quote. I certainly probably said that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In other words, yes, you definitely said it. Now, let's just break down that joke for a second. At the risk of overanalyzing, but it's an important issue. This guy's the most powerful guy on earth, Donald Trump is. So do the people next to him think he's an idiot? The people who helped get him elected, like Sam Nunberg. Well, if you get this idiot elected twice, you know, you're amazing, right? That's the essence of the quote.
But how is that a
Where's
joke?
Where's the joke, right? Like maybe if you,
well, I mean,
maybe
not it that was, it's a one-liner, but just that it's sort of like, well, you can get this idiot elected. Like, you know, if I would say that about you. I'd say, oh, they're going to they're going to give this idiot a show. You know, I mean, that's the joking side of it.
No, I get it, Michael, but you would only use that as a joke if you thought the guy was actually really smart. That's
right,
why it would
right,
be
well,
funny.
That's
like
true.
Like Bill Gates. If this idiot
right, but
could
he's
start
saying
a company,
that he, but he's right? saying it because he is now saying that he thinks Trump's smart. And so he's saying, if you can get this idiot elected.
So that's fair. Do you really believe that?
No, but
does
but
anyone
on,
really believe
on.
That?
Look, the whole point of that comment was to give Bannon credit for getting Trump elected, right? So if you can get this idiot elected twice, you're amazing or whatever. I'm paraphrasing, but he's basically giving Bannon a compliment there because it's like, whoa, you got him elected once. If you could do this twice, incredible.
Yeah,
you know?
That is the very common sense reading of that quote.
Right.
If you thought Donald Trump is an obvious genius and you're kidding about how Steve Bannon shouldn't get any credit, then you would say, you know, if you can get this idiot Stiglitz 2 Nobel Prizes, boy, that would be amazing, right?
Yeah.
By the way, Stiglitz does have 2
but
Nobel
also
Prizes.
Nobody, the other thing is, nobody in the Obama White House is saying, people who like him and think he's worth saying, they're going to get this idiot elected twice? Nobody says that about Obama.
Come on, we're overly, like,
I know,
we're being
I know.
That's what I mean.
Ridiculously over the top fair in trying to figure out, of course it's not a joke. Okay. Of course he thinks he's an idiot.
So the other part about Nunberg in the book has to do with how Nunberg allegedly tried to teach Trump about the Constitution, but couldn't capture his attention long enough to be successful in his efforts. And Nunberg addresses that in this part of the video. Take a look.
one point you're quoted referring to the president as, quote, this idiot. You say at another point that you couldn't say whether he's a good person, an intelligent person, or a capable person, but he is a celebrity. And you recount a really interesting story where you were brought in to explain the Constitution to him, and you say, according to Wolf, I got as far as the Fourth Amendment before his finger is pulling down on his lip and his eyes are rolling back in his head. So for starters, Sam, did Michael Wolf quote you correctly?
Well, I'm not familiar, actually. I didn't see those quotes that you said where I called him an idiot or anything like that. But I can tell you, for instance, one, I did sit with Michael. I'm not out here to criticize Michael. But I think Michael used flourish, I'll put it, on the events I described. For instance, I wasn't there, and I told this to Michael, to teach the president the Constitution. The president had a granular understanding of the Constitution. It was good enough. What I was there for was, it was around 8 days before the first debate, and I didn't want him to have any gotcha questions. You know, there were infamous questions that had been given in the 2008 debates. I remember, you'll recall, where Chris Matthews asked Rudy Giuliani what's the difference between a Sunni and a Shia. So I just wanted him, in case he had a gotcha question on the Constitution or on a justice, I put like a little crypt sheet, a 1.5-page crypt sheet, and we tried to go over some issues.
Okay, so once again, doesn't deny the quote at all, right? He says he used flourish.
He should skip from the Fourth Amendment right to the 25th, and then why should Trump have to worry about what's in between? And then I like where he says, you know, he had a granular understanding of the Constitution, which is good enough. You know, it's not like he's president.
Right? Yeah. And by the way, that also doesn't make sense. Granular means that he understands the details.
Little,
yes.
Of course.
Right?
Yes. Right.
And
he's clearly on his feet.
You wouldn't say, like, Einstein has a granular understanding of the relativity of physics, and it's good enough.
Right.
Right?
No, he has
a granular. No, that means, right. Yeah, of course it's good enough. He has a granular understanding of it. Maybe all these guys
and
are idiots.
Back on, and he's just back on his heels. Whenever I hear somebody say, well, we're from New York, so we speak. No, we're not. I mean, I'm from New York, and people from New York also say, give real answers. There's no, that they're making excuses all the time, and that's just not
look,
a good one.
If you said, I'm from New York, so I use colorful language, no problem.
Right.
That's true, right? I curse. That's fine. I joke around. That's fine. Okay, but where's the frickin' joke? And in the case,
and it's not an excuse for saying, you know, not that he needs one. I'm just saying it doesn't explain it away as it's like locker room talk, right? It's not New York talk.
And in this case, if you actually heard what he said, I was trying to get him ready for the debate because I didn't want a gotcha question. In other words, I wanted him to know what the hell's in the Constitution. That's why we were going over it, and I was pretty sure he didn't know what it was. I mean, do you have to go over the Constitution with Barack Obama? Did anybody say, hey, there might be a gotcha question about the Fourth Amendment,
well,
right? So now you might look normal prep, et cetera, whatever, but he never denied that Trump lost his attention and couldn't get past the Fourth Amendment because he didn't care.
So since you mentioned Obama, it triggered something for me that honestly frustrates me the most about everything that's going on in the country right now. And it's the insane double standard when it came to Obama versus Trump, right? The fact that if Obama displayed even a tiny fraction of the ignorance that Trump displays on a regular basis, I mean, there would be impeachment hearings immediately.
Right.
Like, I'm exaggerating there, but I mean, we wouldn't stop hearing about it. Obama released his birth certificate, and we can't get Trump to release his tax forms, right? They would not drop that issue. They still don't drop that issue. They still think that he's like some, you know, undocumented Muslim that, you know, somehow managed to scam his way into the presidency. But with Trump, we're not allowed to see his tax returns. We'll not release them. And it's just that double standard drives me crazy. Like the fact that he gets away with acting the way that he acts, but Obama, I mean, he would get criticized for mustard on his burger or whatever.
Across the board, look what he said to Billy Bush. Look what he said supposedly in this book about the wives of people he works or friends of his, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. Ooh.
Can you imagine? Forget Obama, Ronald Reagan, the apex of Republican presidents, the presidency for Republicans recently. Mm-hmm. There's no way that they would have let anybody get away. For some reason, he does.
Well, look, now let's keep it real. If there was credible stories about how Obama would screw over his friends to try to sleep with their wives. Okay, not only done, but think about the stereotypes that they would bring into play, okay? Then, if Obama was
what that Muslims do, oh,
and then think about if Obama was, I mean, any 1% of in the direction of Donald Trump's stupidity, the stereotypes that they would say. If Donald Trump was this stupid and kept saying things like this, if Donald Trump said Puerto Rico is an island surrounded by water, big water, ocean water.
Oh my God.
Okay, what would they say about him? Think about it for a second.
Also, some of the statements that come from Trump, like the big water statement, honestly reminded me of Sarah Palin's interview with Katie Couric and how she said she could see Russia from her house and how much backlash she got for that, how much criticism she got for that. And it's interesting how they held Sarah Palin to a much higher standard than they are to Trump. Like, for Trump, he can make those statements on a regular basis and he's still considered smart by his base. But these are the same people that were quick to criticize the intelligence of Sarah Palin. I'm not sitting here trying to, you know, defend Sarah Palin's intelligence. I mean, obviously there were some issues there as well, but or at least knowledge. I don't know if intelligence is the right word.
No, she's an idiot. But
okay.
But let's read. Yeah, that's true. But I don't know if it's sexism or it's just that the standards for Republicans have regressed so far from Bush to Palin to Trump. But Anna's right about the substance of that. Palin is definitely smarter than Trump. That's not even close. So I don't, you know, it might be the regression, it might be the sexism. I don't know why, but a ton of bricks came down on Palin. I think they should have, but two tons of bricks should come down on Trump. He's way dumber than Palin. And that is a sentence that was previously unimaginable.
Yeah. All right, one final part to all of this that I think is important, so let's get to it. Axios is reporting that some of the White House staffers and senior White House officials are considering quitting their jobs following the publication of Michael Wolff's book, Fire and Fury. Now, part of the reason why is because they might be concerned about retaliation from Donald Trump himself. Let me read from Axios. They write that more than half a dozen of the more skilled White House staff are contemplating imminent departures. Many leaving are quite fearful about the next chapter of the Trump presidency. So I bring that up because I am curious to see how it plays out. And if you do see people resigning and you know, those stories making headlines soon, I think that that could also, you know, reinforce some of the stuff that Michael Wolff has written in that book. Because, you know, if they're worried that Trump's going to retaliate, I would definitely
quit. They don't want to stick around and have to defend a White House that's under fire. And that's, you know, it's not uncommon for people to leave an administration after a year anyway. So you'll probably hear, even before this, people were saying that they were leaving. But this, in response to the book, is saying exactly what you're saying. And it says, oh, things are not going to go well here now. And now would be a good time to leave.
Well, it's not crazy for somebody or a couple of people to leave within a year of an administration. But this level of people, I mean, already all the people that have left, Spicer, Priebus,
they were forced out. That's a little different. And that's, I'm not saying it's, but at the end of a year going into the 1 year anniversary of an inauguration, there are typically some, you know, high level staffers that will step away. You know, well, turnover is not unusual, but to this level and for this reason, of course not.
Yeah, and we'll see yet. The exodus has not begun yet. It is now being reported that some are considering leaving. But there's a couple of factors there. One, sure, the book, I mean, and the book has got a couple of factors within it, which is they're quoted, a lot of these guys are quoted as saying bad things about Trump. They haven't, to the best of our knowledge, to this moment, none of them have denied it within the White House. So that's kind of awkward. Mm-hmm. So Gary Cohn called him an idiot, just like everybody else did, according to the book. He hasn't denied it publicly. So the next time they see each other, awkward, right?
Right. And so Trump doesn't read the book.
Yeah, well, and so that's I don't know how you resolve that. The second factor is, let's keep it real, guys, and what I told you from day one, once they pass the giant tax cuts for the rich, they're done with Trump.
Right.
So especially Gary Cohn, who ran Goldman Sachs. He went to the White House to pass giant tax cuts for the rich and for corporations. Mission accomplished. The rest is whatever, right? We cut a little bit of Medicare. We don't cut a little bit of Medicare. We try to go after Obamacare again. Whatever. I got the trillions of dollars in booty that I wanted. See, you wouldn't want to be you. And the third factor is Mueller's coming. And who wants to stay on that sinking ship? And look at what it says in the book. Even the guys closest to him, like Bannon, saying, it's the money laundering, stupid. This is not a little thing. It's not a debate. Like, well, certainly they'll debate it, but it's not like, hey, are you really going to impeach him because of some emails the Russians hacked and I guess he used them? That to me, and I'm keeping it real, Democrats think that's the biggest thing in the world. I think that's relatively minor. But if it's not a little bit of emails here and there, but it's he took money from the Russians and had a deal,
yeah,
you got to get the hell out of the White House right now. And guys like Gary Cohn are not stupid. Diane Powell, not stupid. They got to get out.
Dina.
Dina Powell. Yes.
When you, and also, but it all comes down to the Senate. When you start losing, and I said exactly what you said too, as soon as they get the tax bill, but they're not there yet. They're not abandoning ship yet.
Yeah. And so we'll see. We'll see how this develops, but tick, 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 tick. And so you'll get to see if we're right or not. Okay, we're out of time.
Yeah, so.
Whoa, we're really out of time.
Not for the entire show. We're going to take a break and come back with more stuff, but Ida Rodriguez is going to join us.
Yes, and guys, the insane rant of Alex Jones, and yeah, it's a little amusing how insane it is, but it's also deadly serious in what he's going for there. I don't want you guys to miss that story. We don't talk about him much because he's crazy, but there's something important and dangerous in that I want to share with you guys when we return. Thank you, Michael. Everybody check out Michael Schur at I-24.
Yeah, I-24news.tv, and then also I-24 News on the Spectrum Cable.
All right, excellent. We'll be right back.